Hello, Kira Ra and Sri Ram Ka. Welcome to Sedona Journal Speaks.
Oh, we are so delighted to be here. Thank you for having us.
Blessings to you and all your listeners. This is fun.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. There's no question you're doing the work. You're walking the walk, walking the talk, and are obviously dedicated and committed to the benevolent awakening of humanity. You've done countless interviews on your own radio show with many enlightened and brilliant souls. Today, you get to kick back and share your brilliance and your story with us. How does that sound?
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and we're grateful you're asking.
Yes, thank you.
Certainly, you're very welcome. So maybe we could start at the beginning, like I usually like to start with the channels and the contributors to the magazine. When we do these podcasts, we like to get to know you a little bit better, your life story, how it all came together. And I'm sure you've probably talked about this a lot, but each moment is new, and we're co-creating this new dialogue right now. So let's explore that. Could you start by sharing, each of you, like separately, where you were born and raised and what your family and spiritual or religious conditioning was? And then maybe we can weave you both together into one story when we get to the timing of your magical union.
Well, that sounds wonderful, because actually the timing of our magical union was actually part of the further expansion of the channeling. But thank you for asking. And I guess I'll jump right in, since
please
I
do.
Already have.
Yes.
You know, oftentimes we get to learn our lessons through our birth and through the gift of where we choose to incarnate on this beautiful planet, once we've decided on this planet. And I smile when you ask your question, because I suspect that my story is similar to a lot of others in the fact that I was born very, very awake. It was really something that I just thought was normal, meaning that when I was a very young child, I actually remember levitating in my crib. I remember playing with my stuffed animals in my crib, and we were all kind of floating there. And I remember my mother opening a door and literally making everything fall so that she wouldn't see. And that literally became almost a mantra for my life. By the time I was about, oh my goodness, 5 or 6, my mother, you know how most of us when we're kids, our parents give us that lecture before company comes over about mind your P's and Q's and make sure you're all clean and say thank you. Well, my lecture used to be, and don't make my guests cry.
I so relate to this.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. And it was so, you know, because my lecture used to be, don't tell them what their dead grandparents are saying. Don't tell them what angel is next to them. And for whatever you do, don't tell them what color is going on around them.
Or don't tell them what they fear, what their fears are.
Yes. And, you know, as a little child, you want your parents' approval, you know, and I thought it was normal. I just honestly thought everybody saw this. Everybody knew this. I really just, I never had the quote unquote fear of the extra dimensional beings, because I just honestly thought everybody saw them. And so as time went on, by the time I hit my early teens, my parents really did not enjoy this aspect of me. And it's really quite ironic, because the lineage in both my mother's and my father's side of the family, there were both very, very clairvoyant and beings in both sides of the family, yet they had always been kind of pushed aside. And I grew up in a family where they just didn't want this to be. And so by the time I hit my teen years, I really did everything I could to hide it, and became, you know, on the track of what my parents would expect. You know, I was very a good student in school. I was in, I was raised Catholic, somewhat Catholic, not really Catholic, I guess I should say. But literally followed that track, went into the business world. I was very, very successful. And then a really beautiful gift happened to me. When I was in my late 20s, I was very successful in the business world, and I was running around the country and doing all types of things. And it was Christmas Eve day. And this was very, very powerful for me, because it was Christmas Eve day. I was coming home from yet another business trip, and I got off the plane. And essentially the next thing I remember is waking up in a hospital. And the doctor had told me that not only did I have cancer, but that my chances of survival were next to nothing. And in all honesty, I guess in hindsight, you would have known that was happening to me because I'm 5'10" and I had dropped down to about 110 pounds. Mm. And all I was getting was confirmation from the outer world of how good I looked, you know, and I was so busy working and, you know, living on coffee and oranges and whatever else that I needed the universe to wake me up. And I was told that I either would die if I didn't have the surgery. And that was the first time that spirit really came back into me powerfully. That was the first time I activated the depth of my intuition from my teen years. And I really remember just looking at the doctor and saying, it's Christmas Eve. I'm going home. I want to be with my daughter. And I will, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die. And I had to sign myself out. You know, they're very, very freaked out about you leaving and not doing what they tell you to do. Well, I went on for a few more months until finally I had no choice. I had to go in for the surgery. And when I went in for the surgery, honestly, that's what changed my life. I went in for the cancer surgery. I had very advanced uterine cancer and I died during the surgery. And what was fascinating was that unlike many people that have near-death experiences, mine was not immediate. In other words, I didn't wake up in the operating room or I didn't wake up later on and go, oh my goodness. What happened was slowly I started having very powerful recall. And you know, back in 1989, Danny and Brinkley was just coming on board. There weren't a lot of people talking about near-death experiences. It wasn't that acceptable. There wasn't a lot of community. And I remember going to my young surgeon, who I really feel I smile now because obviously that was part of his career because he was young and this was early in his career. And I remember going in, you know, you go in for that follow-up and we're sitting across the desk from each other. And you know how your doctors have the big files. And I remember looking at him and I just point blank looked him straight in the eye and I said, I died, didn't I? And he turned so pale. You want to watch color drain out of someone's face. And it was hysterical. And he looks at me, takes my file, folds it back up, literally throws it across the desk at me and says, I don't want to know how you know. And that's one of the things I share with people is that when you have a near-death experience, especially during surgery, when you die during surgery, when you wake up in the recovery room, they're not going, wow, are we glad you're here? You know, they don't tell you. And sure enough, in my records, it turned out that I had transitioned right near the end of the surgery, that they had tried to resuscitate me for a little over 4.5 minutes, that they had called a time of death, and that's when my body reanimated. And from that moment on, my life shifted dramatically. And I always say I'm so stubborn that they needed to kill me to wake me up. And so I started from that moment, things started connecting again. I was still traveling. I was still in the business world, but things were really starting to shift very, very rapidly. And I remember one time I was sitting on an airplane coming home from a business trip and I'm looking around the aisles because I'm hearing these people talking to me as clear as you and I are talking right now. And there's nobody around me. And I had to start really accepting what was happening and realized very clearly that everything that I had been recalling was from the near-death experience, and it was getting richer and deeper and deeper. And sure enough, you know, serendipity steps in, and things just started connecting that it took me almost 10 more years to finally say, I'm going to really surrender everything. And it was in end of 1999, when, so almost a full 10 years later, that I couldn't deny what was happening. People were showing up. You know, people were coming to me asking for readings and I was starting to offer messages and I would have good friends who would look at me and say, what did you just say? And I honestly didn't. I was like, I don't know, but I hope it helped you, you know? So it really was this time of wrestling with my life. And so right at the end of 1999, I had a very profound experience where I was in a tub, and I was sitting in a home that was now in foreclosure. I mean, everything had gone full circle. I went from being extremely successful to where nothing was working unless I surrendered to spirit. The more I tried to stay in the quote unquote densified world, the more I kept trying to do things I had done that had always worked before, nothing was clicking. But when I would surrender to spirit, when I would trust and dive into spirit, everything worked. And no matter what I would fear, everything came forward, and it came forward in ways that were almost effortless and easy. And it was New Year's Eve, so it was really turning on the millennium. It was coming into 2000. And I was sitting in this bathtub of this home that I was in foreclosure. I knew I was going to have to move out of soon. And I had this profound, beautiful gift where I literally saw this ray of golden light come in through my navel and offer me a very clear vision of my future. And it showed me that I had two paths in front of me. And one of them was the one that I had been kind of wrestling with for the past 10 years, where it showed me a way that I could save the house, I could stay in that world, I could stay with the person I was dating, I could live that track. And the other one showed a picture of me, and my hair was much, much longer. I was spinning and dancing, and I just kept hearing, "You are free." And in that moment, I simultaneously felt expansion and joy and complete sadness, because I knew I was going to walk into the unknown. I knew I was going to step into the void of the freedom, but I had no idea how it was going to work. I had no idea what was going to happen. And I knew that I was going to have to walk through a very tangible dark night of the soul in literally surrendering everything that I had thought was true up to that point in my life. And certainly here we are, where I'm very grateful I did. And I'm going to stop right there and let Sri Ramka jump in, because the rest of my story is really our story. It's how we met and how everything that's happening now came forward.
Okay, great. I'd love to hear, Sri, I'd love to hear your beginnings up to the magical union.
Well, I call it pre-K.
Yeah.
It's pre-Kira time.
You know, it's a funny thing, because as I reflect back, the life before Kira really is irrelevant, and yet formative and foundational. However, what's vital and vibrant in my memory are the recent years and the work we've done together. Now, that said, as Kira was sharing her story with you, I was reminded of a few pieces of my own. And so let me just say this. I grew up in a small town in Oregon in a very conventional, sheltered lifestyle. And my parents were kind of your classic middle class Ozzie and Harriet types.
Fun.
And I just didn't know anything different. I was the kid that you ran for class president and editor of the school newspaper and mom and apple pie and all of the traditional values. Everything was just grade A normal.
What a good boy.
Yeah, exactly. And what happened to me is, you say, okay, let's scroll forward 18 years, and I lived the Ozzie and Harriet lifestyle, or that dates me right there. Let's just say it was the conservative, middle class lifestyle. At any rate, as soon as I left to go to college and I met people from other cultures and other environments, I simply freaked out. What I mean is, I was so intimidated. I had no idea I was so sheltered. I had no idea the world was so big. There's so much variety. And I just went into kind of an emotional tailspin for a while, because I didn't know how to relate to all these people. They weren't cut from the same cloth that I had been reared in, and yet I was bright enough and astute enough to recognize that there's many ways. That the culture I grew up in, the family of origin I grew up in, was but one of, look at this myriad. And part of that got triggered because, as a gift to me, my parents sent me to Europe after my graduation. So I immediately got immersed in multiple cultures, stayed with different families in Europe and North Africa. And then I popped to college. And by this time, I'm so shook up not knowing what was real. And that was the foundation for a long period of searching. I studied religions. I studied cultures. I ended up with 3 different degrees. I have a couple of master's degrees and a couple of bachelor's degrees. And I just became thirsty. Something ignited in me, which was, I need to figure this out, whatever this is, you know? Mm-hmm. So I started in an entrepreneurial path, and I moved into the technology industry and was very good at solving problems, making machines more human, making software more human. And right when the PC came out, before Windows, I did very well in creating software and hardware solutions. And actually, my company that I started, we took it public. I was flying high for a couple of years, and then the whole thing crashed.
And I also relate to that, too. I was there as well.
Oh, I love it.
You know, and what rises quickly sometimes falls quickly.
Oh, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. And in my case, back at that period of time in the late 80s, when we were doing so well, the Japanese came into the U.S. market with their technologies, and then Apple started coming. Anyway, it's just, that's old news. But here's the good part of it. Is that bankruptcy, going from having multiple millions on paper, and that's all it was on paper, yes, because a public company, you know, the owners can't sell their stock for several years, and then crashing, I found myself on my knees. And sometimes a big ego needs a hard fall. And I was truly on my knees, not knowing who I was or where I fit. You know, I had started a period of searching. I had become accomplished in my field. I crashed. And it moved me in a good way as I began to look at, well, what's really essential? What am I really about? Who am I after all? Right. And, you know, those perennial questions reawakened in me, and I became an assistant minister at a Unity church. I underwent years of psychotherapy because I really got that we need to heal ourselves if we're going to be healthy, happy, and in harmony with our world. We need to take responsibility for any unresolved issues in our life. And after that, I went back to school. I got a master's in counseling, psychology. I began a private practice while undergoing my own healing process and personal development process. And interestingly, you know, Kira was born with her clairvoyance activated. I was hungry for that. I knew that these other worlds and dimensions existed, but I couldn't see them. You know, it was one of those things. I had read Lobsang Rampa and The Third Eye and all these books and Be Here Now and the stories of the yogis in India and all these fantastic things in this other context for reality. And yet I never saw it. How come I can't see this? How come I don't feel this? And the more I explored, the more I meditated, the deeper I went, it began to be revealed. And so I moved very quickly from the psychotherapy years into the energy medicine, energy psychology years, studying with Carolyn Mace, studying at the Still Point Institute. I became a medical clairvoyant, medical intuitive. They liked my work so much, they invited me back as a teacher. And what I realized was, we all can do it. Truth and reality, meaning the deeper layers of truth, are available to all of us. The question is, are we sincere? Are we willing to let go of our preconceptions? Are we willing to set aside those limiting beliefs that keep us locked into a mass consciousness? And so my approach to this day has been one of using my brain along with my experiences to recontextualize what we call reality, to recontextualize what it takes to expand and evolve. And through the choice of surrender and through the courage that it takes to really let go, I found myself in a place of great opening and great magic. And it was from that place that I found Kira.
And it's really kind of beautiful how that happened. We actually are an internet dating success story.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. We met on spiritualsingles.com, and I don't even know if they still exist.
I don't know that they made it.
I really don't. I don't know that they made it, but I was glad they were there when we were there. But it was really quite fascinating because, as I share with most people, you know, during the crazy part of my life, which was my pre-Sheree period, I also blew through four husbands. And I got really good at doing that.
Are they still alive?
Actually, three of them are.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I got very good at repeating my mistakes over and over again until one day I really looked in the mirror and I got that the only thing I had in common with all these failed marriages was me. You know, I was the common denominator.
No, it couldn't be.
No. And it so was. And so... And I was really at that moment in my life where I was really happy. You know, I was beyond that choice that when that divine golden ray of light had come into me, I was beyond that choice. I was clear. I was now out there. I was working in Cherry Creek, Colorado. It's a elegant part of Denver. I was a clairvoyant in a beautiful high-end metaphysical store. I had a 3-month wait for people to get in to see me for readings. I mean, everything was just beautiful. I was pleased and I was happy with the shift in my life. It was a very different life, but I finally felt like myself. And it was actually my girlfriend who came to me one day and said, "By the way, you need to be dating." And I was like, "That is like the last thing I need to be doing." And, and she said, "So I've listed you at this site." And I was like, "What? What have you done?" And she said, "Here's your password. And if you don't like what I said about you, you should go in and change your profile." Well, within about maybe 24 hours, I had this email and it was Sheree, and it took my breath away. I will never forget it because the subject line said escalator to expansion. And mm-hmm. it was one of those deep soul recognitions where I knew before I opened the email that if I even started this communication, everything in my life was going to change again, that I couldn't hide anything, that I was going to have to be nakedly honest with who I am, what I am, and where I'm going. And I responded to Sheree, and that started our dance, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Well, you might say that somebody was tickling their fingers up and down my spine. because...
What time frame was that? What year?
This was 2002.
Yes.
Yeah, 2002.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Uh-huh.
And in the period, you know, just before, it's like Kira had sorted things out in her life. I had sorted things out in my life. I was actually living on a sailboat, single-handing the inside passage to Alaska. I was communing with the past Indians. You know, there's so many burial sites on the islands in British Columbia and up there. And every time I drop anchor, these spirits would come and want me to listen to them. And I was journaling and listening to their stories and helping them heal. And it was just a crazy, wonderful time. And I got this call that said, "You must go to the desert." And I said, "Okay." You know, it was very clear. And so I parked the boat, you know, in a boatyard. I went to Tucson, and in a sense, I dried out. What I learned is the desert is a great place for clarity. And it was there that I heard and felt that my other half was looking for me, and that I needed to look for her. And so it became a thing of, well, how do I find this person? And I was guided to the internet. And, you know, the great tool of connection that it really is in its highest form. And so Kira and I were both in this place of recognizing that once we started talking, we felt the energy more than I had words to explain. Because at first glance, you know how it goes when you meet somebody new, we're on the phone and we're chatting. It started off with emails, but we quickly graduated to phone calls. And we started sharing some life stories. And lo and behold, we learned things about life at the same time. what she was doing in 1989 paralleled what I was doing in 1989. What she was doing in 1992 paralleled what I was doing in 1992. And we began to recognize that there was a connection in our soul travel that we were not conscious of.
And so after only about 3 weeks of, you know, those calls where every night I'm so excited because he, of course, always called me when the cellular rates went down. So I knew what time he'd be calling me.
Yeah, exactly.
I got my free minutes.
It was like, okay, yeah. I'll be calling you at 9:01. And so we decided to meet in Sedona. And we had not met in person yet. And I do want to say for the record, every picture I had sent of him was legitimate. There was no altered photos. There was no altered anything. And the reason I mention that is that we agreed that I was living in Colorado. Sri was living in San Diego at that point. And we agreed to meet in Sedona. So I flew down to Phoenix. He drove over to the Phoenix airport. And I want you to imagine this. Imagine that you've been talking to someone, that you've been feeling their energy, that you are so in love and that you are so aware that this is more than just a person. This is someone that you have a deep soul connection with. And so imagine as a woman how you're feeling. You know, I had on my best skinny suit, so to speak. I had on all of my, you know, I was so excited and I was on that airplane. And being a clairvoyant, I will never forget that the minute the plane landed in Phoenix and I started walking down the gate area to go meet him, I felt this wave of hiding. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I walked out and there were these large round columns. And as a clairvoyant, and because we were so connected, I knew exactly where he was. So I walked right up to him and almost kind of shocked him because I came up right behind him where he was indeed hiding. And he turned around and the very first energy I got from him was, oh my God, I think you're awful. And you want to talk about devastation. And we went through, it was really, he never said it, but of course I could see it. And he started acting it. Even the flowers he had in the car, he didn't give to me. We're driving up on our way to Sedona. It's awkward. And for the first day or so, I'm being told, Sri was very, very clear that I was too tall. I was too fat. My hair was too dark. He didn't like my teeth. He didn't like, I mean, you name it, everything about me that someone could say they didn't like, he had no problem telling me he didn't like.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sri, yeah. You're going to have to explain yourself in a moment.
I know, poor Sri.
It's at this point the audience takes sides.
I think that's what's happening here. Yeah.
And it is all in our book, Sacred Union, The Journey Home. I think it's part of why this book has been a bestseller for 12 years.
But here's, you know, and now that we have some distance on it, yeah. it's a lot easier to share.
It is.
Here's the bottom line. I freaked out. I was in a place of soul clarity and communion on the phone and in the messages between Kira and I, and we could feel each other at great distance. After driving the 9 hours to the airport and being in the airport, I was in my ego, and my ego was frightened to death. And there was a moment there where I realized in hindsight that I recognized if I give into this, it's over, meaning the ego has to go. Mm-hmm. So my ego flared and found every possible reason to sabotage this relationship.
And you know, in all honesty, Eileen, this was a blessing because as a woman who, you know, I've been everywhere from I was hospitalized for anorexia in my early 20s to on the other side of the scale, I've probably trashed my metabolism in so many ways. That what the gift he was giving me, and this actually leads to the entrance of Archangel Zadkiel, the gift he was giving me was I had to love myself so much. And I was, for the first time in my life, I could stand in the presence of this experience and love myself enough to know that this was his experience. These were his projections. It had nothing to do with me.
And
it was very empowering because I had never in my life been able to do that before. Mm-hmm. And it was on day three when we were in the car and we were driving out toward, was that when we were on our
Boynton
way to Canyon? On our way to Boynton Canyon. Mm-hmm. And I collapsed in the car. I just started crying. I was like, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I said, I can't keep holding this presence for you, waiting for you to come forward. And so, you know, it was like everything we had talked about, all the calls we had had. I mean, it was really, I was just like, I let it go. And so we went to Boynton Canyon and we went separate ways. And he went one way and I went another way. And I just sat there and I was journaling and I was communing. And I would say it was probably only about maybe 30, 40 minutes later, Sri found me and he was crying hysterically and just crying and crying and crying and begging me to forgive him. And we really sank into this beautiful tear-filled, tear-soaked soul journey and picked each other up from there and started walking. And it was about, what, 10 minutes later that everything started coming forward.
Yeah, so let me just fill in the story a little bit and then we'll move to the fun part. After this period of my inner struggle between the knowing I had that I had found my other half, that I had found my true partner, and my ego flaring, saying, finding every reason it could to sabotage this relationship, this struggle went back and forth. And when we finally got to the moment in the canyon, I went into a journaling and then a meditative space, and I truly broke through. It was a little bit like that experience Kira had in the bathtub where she saw the two paths. And I realized what was happening. I finally got behind the picture, and I felt so hurt that I had been in denial of the truth of who I was and who we are. And I was in such a state of grief and such a state of dismay when I finally broke through from that righteousness, that ego-oriented reality that just is stubborn, quite stubborn. And so when I broke through and I shared some lines that I'd written with Kira and we realized the sincerity and the truth of who we are, we then began to walk in union. It was a complete shift what happened. And we were hiking up on some rocks and walking, and we were walking as one being with two bodies. And we got to one place, and we began to hear high-pitched sounds. And
you know, like that, you know how your ear suddenly, there's just that really high, high pitch. And it was just, and it was like we were looking at each other going, do you hear that? Do you hear that? And it was so overwhelming that it stopped us in our tracks, and we had to just stop and sit.
And Kira basically moved into a trance state. She was on the earth in that beautiful red clay earth, drawing infinity symbols and mumbling some things. And I was distinctly aware of a circle of beings that had circled around us. And they began projecting high-pitched tones toward us. It's as if we were in the center of a choir. And we were receiving an energy that I did not understand at the time. I just knew that I had chosen to surrender, and I put up no resistance. Kira obviously had no resistance. She was just in a state of I don't have the right words for it, just receiving. And her hands were drawing that infinity symbol, and I kept looking because of my curious piece. I wanted to catalog it, you know. And after that was over, we compared notes a little bit. We shared some of what we understood. We walked a little further. Kira fell down again. We were sitting on an edge of a rock looking down a crevasse. It was a little scary. She slumped over. I grabbed her blouse. The next thing I knew, she sat up so straight. I mean, it was the perfect yogi, erect spine. Her eyes opened, and this blaze of light came through her eyes, and a funny, strange voice said to me, "Hello, we are so glad you are here." And
this is a very... a very Sedona story.
And I immediately...
Now, bear in mind, he's a psychotherapist. I'm sure he was like, oh, my God.
Totally freaking out.
And,
yes.
Well, the database called my brain immediately had a DMS-4 classification of a borderline personality and a psychic break. And yet the part of me that was the spiritual traveler had... I had channeling experience. I was, had these others. I said... Okay, So my first fear was, is this a benevolent being? Mm-hmm. And so I looked and I was thinking, are you of the highest? I was merely thinking it. And the golden energy that bathed me in that moment, my heart once again expanded wider than I knew I was capable of. The tears started rolling down my cheeks again, and I realized I was in the presence of a most benevolent, loving energy. And I just said, who are you? And the message came through. I was going to give you the short version of, you can call me Kiel. I am known as Archangel Zadkiel. And we have been waiting for the two of you to find each other so that you could choose again to make this journey. The choice is yours. And basically, what I learned in that moment is that we are so loved. We are given such permission to have the experiences we choose to have. And if we choose to walk in the pathway of the ego and separation and density, we're given lifetimes of that until we're finished with it. And in this moment, I realized that Kira and I had made an agreement to find each other, and we needed to re-up, meaning to say we're going to continue this path. And that's, of course, what we did. And wonderful. We had daily sessions with Zadkiel. Wonderful, wonderful wisdom coming through the temple of self-ascension, the whole path of self-ascension, and the recognition that the time we're at on this planet is one of reunion. And that the reunion, the languaging we offer for this process is self-ascension, to return to that which you really are, your authentic self. And you know, some traditions, the Hawaiians have come to mind, talk about the basic self or the lower self and the higher self. And many other traditions talk about the higher self. And I asked Zadkiel one morning, I said, well, are we talking here about the higher self? You know, when he was talking about authenticity. And Zadkiel just laughed. So much joy and laughter came from this wonderful being. And he said, Sri Ramka, there is only self. You talk of higher and lower, there is only self. And it began an awakening within me to recognize that we are that. And that when we identify with a lesser version of ourselves, we're just playing. It can be a painful play.
Absolutely. But the way I see it is that you two had to demonstrate that individually before you could come together and create this new reality for yourselves. Is that how you would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I just want to share that from that moment, Eileen, we have been inseparable, other than there was one 3-week period where Sri went back when we finished our journey in Sedona. We had already agreed that we were going to be moving in together, moving forward together. Sri went back and kind of got all of the pieces of his life together. Boxes started showing up at my home in Colorado. And we were married 3 months later. Our first book was published by the end of that year. We've never looked back.
It was quite an accelerated path.
Yeah.
It's been such a blessing because the information that has come through has activated knowingness, it has activated wisdoms. And we're able to share this. We're able to truly offer a joyful energy of ascended beingness to others, and that brings us joy to see the light turn on.
I saw on one of your sites there was a reference to bhakti, the direct connection or communion between soul and creator. In my opinion, and from my own contact and communion experiences, this is really the only work now. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, no, thank you for seeing that and recognizing that, because the more of us on this planet that can recognize that sacred gift and that presence, the faster the planet will continue to lift. Yeah. And so that's a beautiful recognition.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I love I'm still reflecting back on your stories of how you came together. That is actually, I chose the word magical, you know, in my notes, the magical union, but it truly is a magical union because you both did your processing, your letting go, your grieving, what I like to call the moving from the you know, the identity, the ego identity into what's actual and real and authentic.
Yes.
Because creating from that place, that's the only place now to create from. So
yes.
Congratulations and thank you for you know, just being a demonstration of that and sharing your story.
Well, thank you for being our mirror. And,
yeah.
You know, that part of the story is everyone's journey. We all must go through this process if we're to achieve that place of peaceful joy and knowingness. And one of the things that we get the privilege of doing is being with people and sharing. And it's an energetic. It's not just the story. It's not just the writings, though all of those are meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shared experience of coming into a coherent interaction or a coherent reality where we recognize that we're a choice, that compassion is infinite, that we're made of that stuff. And, and I remember one time a few years ago, I had the honor of meeting His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and It was one of those odd moments, but it just ties in with what we're sharing. I was in the front row where he was walking by and he would shake hands with people in the audience, you know, and I held my hand out and he took my hand and he did not let go. He used his other hand to shake the people, you know, touch the people around me. And I felt so honored. And in that moment, I felt this energy, this incredible communion. And it activated a knowingness in me. And it was in that speech that he said, someone asked him about religion, and he said, "My religion is kindness."
Mm-hmm.
And this ties back to the bhakti, that when all is said and done, if we reside in that place, the healing happens for all of us.
Absolutely. And this magical union, couple union that you're describing, I see that as the magical union and oneness for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
That we, you know, and you know, you're triggering this within me so that I say it out loud, so that I can say it out loud. It's so important for us to be talking with each other and sharing with each other, and that magic starts to happen, you know, in stronger and greater ways in the collective.
Yes.
Oh, you know,
that's why I do what I do.
Yeah. And thank goodness, you know, thank goodness you are doing what you do. And you said that so beautifully, because when we can let go of fear and meet each other in that place, then miracles happen. I mean, miracles are our birthright. We're the ones that choose whether or not we want to empower the miracle energy. And through this type of communication, when we allow ourselves, you know, the words I use is when we allow ourselves to be naked in front of our beloved, and the beloved is really everyone. Is that not the ultimate namaste? It's the recognition of the beloved in each and every being. And also the shift, you know, one of the things that Sri and I have been sharing with a lot of people lately and enjoying conversations with people around is that we are at a moment now where it's truly about community. It's truly about cooperation instead of competition. And that when someone comes from a model of competition, what they're really saying is, I'm afraid. I'm afraid there's not enough for me. I'm afraid that maybe my message won't be heard. When the reality is that when we offer the cooperation and the community, everyone is heard in balance, and thereby everyone is lifted. And what an extraordinary moment we are in the planet right now, where we're in 2015, you know, 2015 through 2022 is this powerful 7-year ascension portal, and such a beautiful moment. And we're just, loving that we've arrived and that we're all still here. I love that we've all chosen to stay in form.
I know. I say that a lot. I cannot believe I'm still here.
Exactly.
There's been many opportunities.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we all got excited there. Yeah. I just smile because there's been many opportunities to leave. And many of us have had those moments of re-upping and choosing again.
Exactly. And we are here. And, you know, we're here. The planet is going through so many things right now. And I am just so ecstatic that we are a benevolent voice, that Sedona is a benevolent voice, because there's enough of the other voice out there. And to remind and honor and live in the benevolence of the universe is such an incredible blessing. It really is.
It is. I chime in there. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
In fact, I was going to say earlier that, you guys noticed, you corroborated on Soul Path markers. I'm listening to your stories and going, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, I had that happen. Oh yes, that year, that experience. So I think there's a lot of us coming together now and connecting, speaking out loud with each other. Many of us had this similar soul path. Not to take away from your story of coming together as a couple, that's mighty powerful stuff. And I think we're going to start finding, the ones that still are here.
Yeah, well, we're talking to each other
now.
Yeah, and that doesn't take away at all. If anything, it's affirming. For example, like with my near-death experience, finally I can offer that as validation for others that had it. Yet in 1980, when it happened for me, there was no community. There was no ability to really flush it out or talk about it. And so Sri and I were having this conversation the other day. We've talked about this a lot on our radio show. For those of us that are speaking, for those of us that are holding this presence, that have been doing this work for years, often people ask Sri and I, how do you guys have time to do everything you do? And I just laugh and respond and say, because it's our life. This isn't a job. This is our life.
Exactly.
And when you live the work, the gift is that our job, your job, if you wanted to use the word job, is to show to all of those who are coming up through us, with us, next generations, that they are free to be. May their path be easier because of what we are all doing. What a gift.
Oh, I know. I so wish that for them, that it's not as difficult as it was for so many of us.
Yeah, to be called.
What I like to call the front runners. What word do you use?
I like that word. I enjoy that word.
Yeah.
I use the word pioneer a lot. I use spiritual pioneer.
Yeah. And do you relate to the young people, the millennials now?
I relate to the ones that are truly, I relate to all beings. I think we all relate to all beings. Every being has their own unique path. And, I have a daughter who's 27 and I have a daughter who is 16. And we are so, Sri and I, especially at our YouTube channel, Official Sri and Kira, we have so many millennials that are following us at YouTube, that write in through social media, that are really awakening and seeking guidance that they're not crazy, that they're okay.
I was just going to say validation.
Exactly.
Right.
More than anything.
Yeah.
And I think that, we saw that with the Indigo Kids and the ones that are older now. The younger generation, we always are going to have a cultural gap because their point of reference, their environment was quite different than what we grew up with. And I'd like to think that I've transcended culture at this point. However, when one is 18 or 28, their worldview, meaning the adaptive view, comes with its own price and prize. They're open to interconnectedness, yet they have their own challenges as a result of this culture. And the result of the loss of hope in the greater outer environment And so it's prompting the inner search. You know, everything has a blessing. And when we look at these countries with their unemployment problems, their currency problems, their political issues, and the youth can't afford college, and I'm not going to get on a rant here about the outer world issues. However, I just want to say it creates an environment that provokes a deeper look.
And that's the blessing. I see this as the blessing, Eileen. I feel that what you're doing, what Melody's doing, what we're all doing is we're saying you are free, that regardless of what the illusion, this is just happens to be the matrix of their moment. You know, the matrix of my youth was the Vietnam War. You know, we all have the matrix of our generation, and the most beautiful gift that we can give right now is communication through the generations with mutual respect for each other. And we've been actually doing a lot of radio shows about this lately, and I'm enjoying very much the fact that we're really having quite a bit of dialogue with, I would say, people in their 20s, 30s, late teens, and that they're hungry for the mentorship and for the communication. And it's a beautiful moment. It really is. You know, I always giggle with people and say, when did we allow the word crone to mean witch, and why don't we queen instead of crone? And so so what I do is share with people that, you know, why don't you come queen with me? And that to become the benevolent queen is to say that I am holding open the door for you to become the benevolent queen as you become the benevolent princess or the prince or the king. And that are we not all princes and princesses and kings and queens of our journey if we allow that gift to be worn with the crown of awakening instead of the crown of density?
Very well said. Very well said. And I'm so happy to hear that you are making this connection to the younger people. I really believe that they need to feel welcomed in and validated, even though they come from a completely different perspective. Mm-hmm. My sense is that they are, they are the bridge.
Agreed.
Yeah,
there's a spark inside of them that I can envy at times.
Oh, me too. Ooh, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, a passion. I like to use the word, you know, my favorite phrase is passionate action. That when we can bring passionate action to what we do, then it comes from the depth of our soul and our heart. And if we relax into our passionate action and allow the universe to guide our hands, then truly we are co-creating and we can cross generational borders.
I agree. It's been amazing listening to both of your stories and how your stories come together. I'd like to give you the opportunity to share with listeners how they can find you, your websites. Now, tell me about Avesa Quantum Healing and the TOSA. Is it TOSA or TOSA?
Yes.
La Laguna Hotel and Spa. That sounds amazing. tell us all about where we can find you and what you got going on.
Well, thank you for asking. You know, the primary website where we post our work and our activities and weekly messages and monthly messages is simply sriandkira.com, sriandkira.com. And that's our portal, so to speak, that links to other websites. AvesaQuantumHealing.com is dedicated to the practitioners of the Avesa modality that we brought through, which is an energy healing. It's a realignment with your soul's energy, and it brings your chakra system into the ascended state. And once people touch that state, you know, what many would call a kind of a samadhi experience, it serves as an inner guidepost for the journey. And so it's a very powerful, wonderful gift to have an Avesa healing session. And Avesa Quantum Healing tells more. Now, TOSA La Laguna is our wonderful hotel at Lake Atitlan, Guatemala. We originally opened it as a retreat center for people to come down for personal journeys and healings. And the reason we did is because the lake is magnificent.
Magical is the word.
It's a huge crater lake. It's 10 miles across. There is a portal, an ascended master's abode that hovers in that lake. People who come to this site, we have several acres of nature preserve. And when they just dwell there, things happen. I mean, healing happens.
Yeah,
it's truly lovely. You shed the artifacts of density living and begin to reconnect with the real you. And so it's simply tosaspa.com is the website where you can find that, T-O-S-A-S-P-A, tosaspa.com. And we've opened it to the public. It's an all-inclusive destination with gourmet vegetarian cuisine. And so people come, they get their three meals a day of just outrageously well done vegetarian food, and we have snacks throughout the day and beautiful water and kayaks, and it's just a great way to unplug.
Yeah, it's we attract a lot of small groups that want to come and be there. A lot of the beautiful rooms are dome-like, and every room is a suite, yet it's very, very affordable. It's a blessing. It was a blessing. It actually is a magical journey how that came to us that we talk about in our book, 2013, Mayan Sunrise, which is actually a very timeless book. It wasn't just about 2013. And so again, but as Tree mentioned, TreeandKira.com is where you can really find just about everything. And also our YouTube channel, Official Sri and Kira is our YouTube channel. And that's also a very active portal that we have monthly messages, predictions, revelations, channelings, ensoulments. Everything is at Official Sri and Kira as well. So thank you for asking, because there's lots of places people can find us.
And also in quite regularly in the Sedona Journal of Emergence magazine.
Our favorite. It's, you know, every month, it is such an honor every month to be able to submit and offer things for the Sedona Journal that are created just for, these are messages that we bring through just for the Sedona Journal, and always so powerfully beautiful. I mean, just so powerfully beautiful. I have to admit, Sri and I sometimes sit here and awe ourselves and go, wow, you know, just such a gift. And what Melody has done through the years and what you're doing is just such a beautiful gift for the planet, and such an important gift that needs to be out there, and we're grateful to be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And people can find your articles in probably every month, is that correct? And
yes.
Pretty consistent.
Yes.
And that can be found online at sedonajournal.com, and also, you know, you can call the offices, and I'll give all those details later. I will make sure that all of your links are up in the podcast show notes. But before we close the podcast, I'd like to invite you to share an inspiring message in this now moment for the listeners. You know, perhaps something to just kind of keep us going and keep us feeling connected, and, you know, if you have any handy tools, you can throw those in as well. Appreciate anything you have to share.
Well, taking in a deep breath and inviting all of you to perhaps bring a hand to your heart and allow your shoulders to relax and allow yourselves to just relax your breath. This message is coming in from the Cosmic Essene Brethren. And the Cosmic Essene Brethren come forward today, and they are smiling and saying, "It is with great reverence, joy, and love that we say hello to thee. And we offer to thee this moment of divine connection, for when the universe comes forward and invites you to float, the floating comes in as if it is a bird gently swimming through the air of your world. Imagine yourself now as that bird and lift up into the gift of your own beloved wings. For angels of divine light and love, it is your time to fly. It is your time to remember that you are ever present to be free, and you are ever present to see in the greater perspective than that which may bring forward to you in the limited view of living in a world of gravity. Allow yourself to simply remember that you are formless, and that the form is the gift that is given to you to experience this world of density now. Regardless of that which may present itself, and in with all that is coming forward to you now, begin to feel yourself flying. And over the next coming months and years, when you feel heavy, remember that you can lift, and that all it takes is this moment of heart connection, gentle breath, closed eyes, and a light smile. For these gifts are yours, and they are ever present with you. And we invite you to remember that the generations of energies that have built up on your planet that are here now are yours to dance with. So dance, beloved angels, dance. It is your time, and you have waited for this time. And yet the wait is over unless you choose to continue sitting on the sideline. Dance, fly, smile, and be. These are the gifts that will guide you through, for you are here by choice, and everything that is coming forward is your playground. Choose your tools, use them wisely, and float, my angels, float. And so it is.
And so it is. Thank you so much. I'm dancing in my chair.
Namaste. A beautiful hug to all of you.